everyone, and welcome to episode 548 of MTG Goldfish Podcast. I'm Seth, probably better known as Saffron Olive, and we have the full crew here this week, kicking things off with the owner of MTG Goldfish, Richard. How are you this fine Monday, Richard?
Good morning, Seth. Doing well. I just watched K-pop Demon Hunter this weekend, so I'm excited about one of our topics today.
You were prepared for upcoming magic sets, perhaps, but we'll get into that in a minute. We got another co-host in Krim. Good morning, Krim. How's it going today?
Oh, pretty good. I've already seen K-pop Demon Hunter, so I'm glad you saw that, Richard. It's actually pretty good. It's pretty well done, animation-wise.
Now, speaking of K-pop Demon Hunter, which I have not seen, who knows? I might watch it someday. But we're going to be talking a little bit about a potential upcoming Universes Beyond set that we found out about this week from Hasbro CEO Chris Cox. We're going to get into Standard a little bit. There's some tournament results, and good Lord, is there a lot of EVing going on. And then we have Fish Mail, maybe a little bit of Edge of Eternities in Modern. So we're going to jump around a bit. But before we get to all that, a reminder that today's show is brought to you by Card Conduit and Card Conduit's the easiest way to sell your magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use their sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtggoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your magic card. So thank you to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And let's talk some magic, and let's start with one of the more interesting pieces of news of the week. So a couple of weeks ago, Hasbro had to report their Q2 earnings, and they crushed it. Well, Hasbro didn't crush it. Magic crushed it. Final Fantasy crushed it. Hasbro itself, not so much. We talked about that a little bit before, but there was this conference call with Hasbro CEO Chris Cox talking to investors, and there were some interesting tidbits in there. Richard, I think you saw this article. What did Chris Cox mention they're looking into as far as Universes Beyond and Magic?
I'll quote him. "Don't be surprised if you see us poking into romanticy. Don't be surprised if you see us looking at K-pop bands. Nothing is off the table. Blah, 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 blah. Wizards wants to appeal to female consumers, which currently make up 30% of the player base." I still don't buy that number. But, but, Liliana Idol Group? It's happening? And you know it's going to make so much money. Like, you all think this is a meme? But it's not, right? Because K-pop Demon Hunters just released on Netflix a couple weeks ago, and it's like shot to the top. It's the top of Spotify. I don't even know where it came from. I watched it. It's a banger. It's actually really
is it?
Good. Okay, so I casually follow K-pop, so like I get all the references. I don't know if you just like come in fresh, like never seen K-pop, if this will make any sense to you. But I think it's a banger. I think it's amazing. I see rumblings of Academy Awards for it. I don't know, but I was thoroughly entertained. But our rival in TCG making Riot, League of Legends, they made KDA, if you guys remember KDA, which is their pop band skins. They were at the top of the charts with this fictional group of K-pop artists. So this is a thing. And looking at the Reddit comments, I think this would actually be banger. People are talking about like KDA style things. People are talking about like Sailor Moon. What do you call that? Like that magical girl transformation thing. Like, and I think a lot of people would pay for Magic Girl, Liliana, Chandra, Vraska.
I mean, wouldn't they just Universes Beyond? I think you might be being too optimistic there. When I hear K-pop bands, I imagine we're gonna take like a literal K-pop band and put them.
Nah, they would never
the
do that.
Last thing I want.
No.
Look at Doctor Who. Look at Doctor Who. There's a lot of real people in those cards. I'm just saying.
I find it very funny that they said K-pop band. By the way, it's like it's not a band.
The
phrasing to me felt like oddly. Whew, like I don't know. It felt kind of boomer. Right? It's just like K-pop band. That's like everything is Pikachu. Is that a Pikachu? Like, I love a Pikachu. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Hello, fellow children, for sure. What is romanticy? Like, is that just fantasy that is romantic? Is that an actual, I don't really know the genre. Like, is there, can you think of an iconic romantic?
I got you.
Okay, what do you got?
Twilight?
Here?
Court of Thorns.
Oh,
what the heck
yeah,
is that?
I shouldn't have even asked because I don't know any pop culture, so.
I don't know. I mean, A Court of Thorns is this thing that's really popular right now. There's giant displays of it. It's apparently, like, really hot elf guy swoons girl.
Is it a movie? A book?
No, it's a book.
Like, what is it? It's a book.
It's a book, yeah. There's lots of books like it. You know, yeah, like, I mean, even Twilight and things like that. But Twilight's, like, kind of, like, bad. But at least... You know, Court of Thorns is supposedly good. I mean, I don't know this. I haven't read it yet, but I know lots of friends that have. So I hear all about it. I just like my knowledge of K-pop, you know, my girlfriend passively, she just gives me all this information and I'm like, oh, dope. So, yeah, like romanticism is a lot like that.
It's Twilight for us boomers, right? It's
okay.
Like Twilight is fantasy, yeah. Right? It's werewolves and vampires. That sounds like Magic the Gathering to me.
So fantasy, right? Romance,
but
basically.
Well,
it's written through the lens of romance and targeted towards a female demographic. And
do you know that Kalia?
I actually read Twilight. Did you know that? I actually read the entirety of the series because I was curious why it was so popular. And it is the most like terrible writing you could like imagine.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just making this up, but it was along this level. Like, she was so scared that she was scared. And I'm like, what? What? Like, who wrote this? I'm like, what kind of writing is this, right? Like, it was like that kind of level. But
it's like
it's like novel
level, yeah.
It's like,
God,
that trashy,
yeah,
like, feel-good kind of, it's like, you know, it's like reading tabloids or something, right? It's, like, still kind of entertaining, even though it's not written well. But that shows you, like, how powerful it is, right? It could be written like crap, but, like, still be one of the biggest franchises, yeah, of the whatever year, decades ago, right? But I think that's what they're going for, and I can see how they stretch it. You're like, Twilight has vampires and werewolves and an eternal battle over time. Yeah, we could do this, right? We can shove this into the Magic universe. It's just Innistrad, right? So I can see it. I don't know how they're going to do it. I still think the K-pop band or the magical girl route is smoother for Magic players, but Twilight.
Well, magical girl stuff, like Sailor Moon that you had mentioned, that would work really well in Magic, because I think the thing here is, like, you will, from a visual standpoint, it's very bright, it's very pink, it's very clean looking, right?
Yeah.
And then when you read it, because I've read Sailor Moon, my girlfriend is like all the mangas, and, you know, we did like, hey, if you read a comic, I'll read Sailor Moon, right? So,
oh, she's read so much Doctor Strange. Okay.
I mean, actually, no. It's whatever she wants. It happens to be Moon Knight. But yeah, like the one thing here is I read Sailor Moon, and dude, it's really dark. It's like absurdly dark. And then if you're like an anime fan, Madoka Magica, stuff like that, these are all absurdly dark coming of age stories, girls having to deal with the pressures of societal like expectations and things like that, and it done in a very cute overcoat, but is actually just super depressing and very, very real.
Interesting.
So
We can't go there. We can't go there. I think Wizards will not, like, you cannot have like 40-year-old like male nerds sitting around playing Sailor Moon as like the the marketing material for your game. Like,
is that
even
what,
if
is
we
that...
enjoy it, whatever, like, that cannot be, right? So it's got to be KDA, you know?
But it's magic.
It cannot be.
It is magic.
You're like, yeah, I'm like, there's no way. If magic does that, it's over, right? Like, there's no way.
I mean, like,
it's dark,
is any worse than, like, One Piece? Or, like, if we're worried about 40-year-old dudes, like, isn't some of the, like, crossover, like, some of the other games already, like, similar to that or not really?
I think the fact that it's targeted for little girls and it's all, like cute and bubbly and, like, I don't know, right? It's like
I don't really know Sailor Moon, so.
Oh, dude.
So it's like
kid's
thing?
It is not, okay, it is not a kid's thing. Like,
I would...
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, do you know how you react when you hear, like, people, like, grown men playing with My Little Pony? you know, engaging in the friendship. There's nothing wrong with that. They're ponies right now, right? But we're just like, right? Because we're not part of the community. Well, that's how everyone would view, you know, us playing with Sailor Moon or, you know, whatever, insert random thing made for like 8-year-old girls or whatever, right? And it may be unfair, you know, that's not the proper way to judge us for doing that. But, you know, that's kind of how it is, right? So I don't think Wizards will
But maybe that's exactly what we need, too, right? Like, you know, it's a very dude space. It's a very dude space, okay? And I think
it would be popular. I think it would be popular.
Yeah.
But I don't know that Wizards wants to go there.
And the themes of Sailor Moon are actually of all of this. And, okay, maybe K-pop Demon Hunters, but, like, the themes of Sailor Moon and the themes of like Madoka Magica, these are all things that fit really well into magic. Like when you talk about like what the flavor of that world is and what magic is. So all of them draw magic. And I mean, you've all heard it before, but like everyone talks about Goku from Dragon Ball Z. Everyone knows like Usagi or Sailor Moon, the main one, the blonde girl. She is actually more powerful than Goku.
Wait a minute.
And when it comes to power scaling,
we've evolved into pure nerd talk.
We're going into power scaling.
More powerful. Who's stronger, Goku or Superman? Hold on, wait a minute.
Like legit, like this is a real like topic people have online every day, and it's been determined that Sailor Moon is way more powerful when it comes to like what happens, right? Like she draws power from another dimension. And so it kind of just completely obliterates another dimension, but that's okay, I guess. You're going to sacrifice a dimension to save yours. Don't worry. This is what I'm saying. Like, there's a lot here, and I think it is, like, if from a visual standpoint, it may just seem very happy-go-lucky, but it is not.
So let me ask you guys from a magic standpoint. The reason Wizards is talking about this, they're pretty straightforward, right? They'd like to get more female consumers, more women playing magic. We get the number 30% of the player base being female in the article. Kind of funny because like 5 or 6 years ago, it was 40% the last time we got numbers from Wizards, which I don't know if that means we lost 10% of our women players since then, or if we just should not believe these numbers completely, which is kind of where I'm at. But I'm curious, do you think this would work? Like, I think getting more women to play Magic, more female players to play Magic is a good goal. Like, that's an awesome goal. But is the problem, is what's keeping more women from playing Magic that the sets don't appeal to them? Do they just not like Bloomborough and Aether Rift and Final Fantasy? Like, is this the issue that is keeping Magic so male-dominated? Or do you think maybe it's something else that could possibly be keeping more women from going out to their LGS?
What do you
think? I don't know, Seth. What do you think, you know? Like, do you think there's any other thing outside of the Magic set?
There might be some other possibilities. But there are some other possibilities.
Okay, I
could name
the source does help. I would say Final Fantasy brought in a larger percentage of female consumers than any other set. Right? Does that fix every problem in the magic space? No. Right? But it certainly helps when you want to be in there, right? Yeah. So Sailor Moon would help if it doesn't, like, alienate the rest of the audience. You know, what you don't want is, like, the entire audience, like, going away. Like, let's say Aether Drift, you know, was very popular among female consumers. Like, that's not a good thing, right? If, like, everyone else hates it, right? But I think Final Fantasy does it. There's got to be other franchises that are more, like, Pokemon would do it. Pokemon. Has a higher
Pokemon and Magic,
but you know there are franchises that are beloved by the existing player base and also female consumers, right? And they just gotta find it. And
I mean,
Final Fantasy kind of did that.
Also, yeah, Final Fantasy really hit the mark there, right? Where that's like kind of exactly what we want, where the existing player base liked it and it's bringing in new players and maybe tilting even more towards women or female consumers. But Zarkin, what were you gonna say?
I mean, did you get this? Women also love just whatever you normally would put out, like, you know what I mean, like Bloomborough and like fantasy sets.
Well, that's not true, like, though, right? Like, I have 25 years of magic to say otherwise, right?
But I mean, but we're already headed in that direction, right? Like, as in, like, I think for them to go immediately and be like, well, we need more women to play, so we're gonna just put like Blackpink in the game, right? Like, it's like, you know, like I I don't think that's true. I don't think that's going to necessarily solve that problem. I think there's a lot more keeping women from playing Magic, right? The themes help. Themes help. But, like, I do not think that we're talking just Magic sets. Because, like, you know, Bloomburrow did great. Final Fantasy was great for that. Like, we have a lot of things to still, like, Avatar is coming down the pipeline, right? And, like, Avatar. You have Legend of Korra, right? Like, that was... That's very good for that as well. And Legend of Korra is part of Avatar's universe. So, and yeah, like, I don't know. I mean, people know a lot. Like, women know all these IPs as well.
I will say, just the phrase nothing is off the table is a little worrying, because that makes, I kind of wonder if Hasbro's kind of like drunk on the success of Final Fantasy right now, and they just are like, oh my god, we gotta have another Final Fantasy. How do we do this? How do we get more players? And it makes me worry that they're just going to go way off the rails, just like trying some things that maybe they shouldn't try. Should I be worried about that, Richard?
Last thing before we move on. Okay, think Lego. Okay, like, Magic is very clearly headed down the Lego path. Now, I don't know when Lego started Universes Beyond, like 20 years ago or something. But, like, there was a time where Lego was just a big bin of, like, random crap, and you, like, build it together and you make your own designs, right? That's not how Lego works in 2025, right? Lego is an IP machine, and the IPs range from everything from, like, Star Wars to, like, cars to, they just did Animal Crossing or something, stuff like that, right? Yeah. Lord of the Rings, right? And then people are like, oh, no, you know, what about your initial creative designs? Or what about just building from the blocks you have and doing whatever, right? Like, people, you know, it's the same kind of Universes Beyond fears. And I don't know that there's anything that's not game for Lego at this point, right? They have literally everything, right? They have, like, Barbie Legos. They have, like, Pokemon. Pokemon's actually Mega Blocks. But they have, like, the range of everything, right? And I don't know that people are like, wow, because you released this Back to the Future set, I cannot play Lego anymore. I cannot enjoy my, you know, Star Wars set because you released this. So I feel that's where Magic is going. And it brought Lego from, like, the brink of bankruptcy into whatever it is today, which is, like, one of the largest toy companies, period. So I'm pretty sure Wizards is doing that playbook, and I'm pretty sure it's working, like, based on everything we've seen so far. So I think there will be a point where, like, literally everything will have a Magic set, and the purists will always be like, well, in my day, we had 5 bricks and we built with our imagination, right? Instead of having, like, 18,000 custom parts that make perfectly, you know, the latest car.
I mean, there... I think that's great. I think that's great, right? As outside of one key issue, by the way, and, like, something that we need to see fixed, and it's the pricing of this. Like, the pricing of it is my concern.
Isn't Lego godly expensive? I'm pretty sure Lego is ridiculously expensive.
Yeah, the Infinity Gauntlet thing that I made and the Iron Man helmet. Yeah, I was like, my face was scrunched up as I spent $100.
I think there's a difference, though, because what I would see as the difference is with Lego, you don't have a game or a meta game or anything, right? It's not like with Lego, you buy what you like. Like, it's really, Lego works really well for this set's not for you, because you can buy a Lego once every couple of years because you like what it looks like and you build it and that is what it is. It's a little different in Magic, though, right? Where every set, if you want to play Standard or Modern or even to some extent keep up with Commander, every set has to be for you, right? Or else you fall behind the game. Like, so you don't really have the option to be like, oh, I don't really care about, you know, this IP, so I'm just not, you know, I'm just not going to do it this time. Or, like, I don't know. Is that what Wizards wants? Like, is the idea to actually train people to not care about all their sets and just, like, pick and choose every couple of years there's a set you like and you buy one and then the rest of it you just play Hearthstone or something?
You could just ignore it if you don't care competitively, right? Like, entirely. I think that's the goal, right? As the game seems to focus towards a casual, like, you know, kind of mind state. It's just like, hey, if you like this, buy it. And then if you play Standard, you don't care because you are clearly out here to just, like, you know, grind it out. And if you care about the gameplay, then you don't care about the thing on the cardboard.
Yeah, I think that's an enfranchised problem. Think about how you play Lego. You just buy the set, you build it, and call it a day. You may have taken five times as much time as necessary to build it. You don't, like, search YouTube videos and podcasts and figure out what the Lego metagame is and if this set is worth it or if you can somehow, like, assemble whatever you're trying to build from the crap you have already. You're just like, Lord of the Rings, $400, sure. Right? And I think that's how people will buy Magic. And we know this works because that's how people bought Final Fantasy. Here's a collector box. I'm going to crack it. It's going to go on my shelf and I'm done. Right? And they don't care about the playability of their Sephiroth, which is basically zero, but it's one of the most expensive cards ever. And doesn't matter, right? Like, they don't care about what's happening in Standard or what the Commander metagame looks like and any of that, right?
That's the part that scares me, though, because I do care about the actual game. And I feel like this is divorcing profits and incentives from Wizards from the game being good. Like, you don't need the game to be good if you can sell Sephiroth or Sailor Moon or whatever to people who don't even play the game. And that's the part that scares me, because I really do care about the game being good. And I just worry that we're drifting in a direction where Wizards doesn't need to care about the game being good. And that's what scares me about the long-term health of everything. Like, yeah, maybe Magic will go on forever as a collectible, but if we get to the point where the game's just not fun to play anymore, that's personally, that would really bother me, because that's standard. What I care about the most.
I don't think that the game is bad, and I think that the game is absurdly well done, right? The core gameplay system of Magic. And I look at it as all these IPs that they've worked with have some terrible TCG, some terrible thing just associated with them. So my idea is that I think that, like, maybe the Magic sees it as like, hey, we have a killer game, core gameplay system, and we'll just reskin whatever we gotta, and that'll just draw people, because we're gonna just make these cards anyways. May as well attach, like, I don't know, Stone Cold Steve Austin to this, right? Yeah, like, so if you can do that and everyone's gonna play our game because we know we have the best game, why not?
I mean, as long as you can keep being the best game as you do, yeah, that, then I think that's probably fine. But speaking of the best game, let's talk about Standard. we recently had some Standard news. We had Rotation a week and a half ago. We had a bunch of bannings a couple months ago. This week was Arena Championship 9, and I don't put too much weight into Arena Championships just because there are these really small sort of inbred metas. It was like 37 people at this one. But at this tournament, 54% of the players played as it Cauldron. As the tournament went along, it was literally just Cauldron smacking every other deck until the top 8 was 7 as it Cauldron. Top 4 was all as it Cauldron. So those numbers are kind of concerning. But like I said, it's an Arena Championship. It's a weird inbred meta. However, on the same day, we had a Standard challenge on a Showcase challenge on Magic Online, which was 59%. 59% of the top 32 is it Cauldron deck, which, if you look at the last week of Modo results, we went from at the beginning of the week, right after Rotation, is it Cauldron being like 10-15% of the meta, wasn't even the most played deck, to now it's been 35, now 60% of the meta. What do you guys think about is it Cauldron in VV? Like, we're so close to Rotation. Have we already reached the crisis point, or is it too early to be freaking out about is it Cauldron and the power of Eevee and Soul Cauldron? Where are you guys at with this based on the recent results?
I'll say that, you know, Seth, how many podcasts have we had where I'm like, I swear, man,
oh, it's a lot. Like, we're Cauldron. 548.
Oh yeah, we're at 540. Okay, well, somewhere in the 450s. I just remember going, yo, this Cauldron card is crazy. I think this Cauldron card is crazy, and it just needed, like, a good activated ability, right? It was a card that should have been busted some amount of time ago. And it's finally here, and I think that the deck is very, very strong, but you also know that I love the hell out of a very intricate and a deck that allows you to flex your brain with deep play patterns. Oh, man, I think this VV Cauldron deck is giving me the Cobblade tingles. Dude, I love this deck. I know it's a one-deck thing right now, But like, if it is a one deck meta, this is not like Simic Food where I just like run my head across the keyboard. This is where you are playing three decks put into one, right? And it's like, okay, when the mirror match happens, oh man, it's fun. Like it is like peak big brain. And we're talking like which half of the deck your opponent has, you have to play around that half. So if that half doesn't like, you know, you can't fire off your removal willy-nilly. Is it better to let something live? When do you activate Cauldron? Because what if they blow it up? You know, like there's, I have a blast. I think this deck is so much fun. But yeah, there's a lot of it. I'm not surprised. Also, I have a Vivi in the background, so you know I love Vivi.
I can't. Crim is in heaven. I feel like I play way too much Magic for that. Like, is it Cauldron Mirrors? Probably be fun for the first, you know, 5-10 times. But if it's actually going to be 50, 60, some ridiculous percent of my matchups, oh my God, it's going to get boring very quickly. Oh. Richard, what do you think? Where are you at on this? Are we already at the call for banning stage?
Standard is beyond cooked. I think, okay, I have so many reasons. Okay, let's look at Standard Challenge, 59%. This is where you're, this is like a WotC number, okay? Because 1 to 11, okay? There's two non-Izzet Cauldron decks, okay? 13th is a non-Izzet Cauldron deck. 14th to 23, there's one non-Izzet deck in there. And then 24 to 32, it's all the other decks, okay? So, yeah. like if you just cut it at top 16, top 24, it's all Cauldron, okay? the non-Cauldron decks are anchoring the rear, okay? Arena Champs, small meta. I feel people misuse this thing, okay? So what happens in a small meta? You know everyone who's playing there, right? So you know if someone is bringing best deck in format, say, is it Cauldron? You can metagame them with some terrible jank. Right? Because you know you're just playing Cauldron all day. You can bring some like terrible tier 3 deck that just straight up counters it. And you know you're not going to face like the counter tier deck. That's not what happened. They looked at the small field and they're like, Cauldron? Nothing beats Cauldron. Everyone knows I'm playing Cauldron. I'm bringing Cauldron. I'm going to beat them. Right? That's what happened, right? So we only use like small format when it's, you know, pre-release, things like that, where people are actually just brewing like random garbage, right? But this is like, you know, everyone's bringing Cauldron and you can't stop it. Third, it's an $850 deck. Okay, like what? Like even if you had an unbalanced format, do you want the best deck in your format being like $800 plus? No. And then finally, it's the Nadu thing. The tracking of the game is so miserable. You have to do the stupid Nadu thing where you split your board into two halves. You're like, these ones have VVs already. These ones have not VV activated. And then you take like these long, monotonous like turns that go forever. And then the dumb thing is, let's say you don't win. You pass priority back. Now you have like 80 million mana again to go. Right? Like that's the worst part. You can't, like, it's so hard to fizzle this deck out. They're like, yeah, on turn 4, I made 50 mana, and I somehow didn't win the game. I'm going to pass priority back to you, and then during your turn, I'm going to use 50 mana again. And you're sitting here with, like, 4 mana going, like, come on, dude. Right? Like, it's just miserable gameplay pattern, so this deck needs to go, like, yesterday. There is no saving it. This isn't like 2010 or something where, oh, don't worry, the pros will fix it. Like, no, we've grinded Arena and Challenges for like a couple weeks now. Like, this is it, right? This is it, right? No Edge of Eternity's cards are being played. No Final Fantasy cards are being played outside of one card, Vivi, right?
I mean,
like,
the
last two standard
sets,
even after rotation, are seeing like no impact in the format, right? Like, this looks like a massive fail from every angle. I can't see a reason why you would want to keep this.
It's, yeah. I mean, so I'm trying to somewhat withhold judgment until the showcase event in a couple of weeks. I think if that posts these numbers, I think then it's going to be undeniable that there's an issue, because we haven't hit like a really big open paper tournament yet. So I'm trying not to like freak out too much. I will say, I made a video today actually on the main channel about Vivi in specific, and I feel like Wizards really messed up on that one. There was actually a video with Gavin talking about, like, the design process of EV. I mean, like, yeah, the original version, it had to tap to make mana. You could only cast one spell the rest of the turn after you activated it. But we found that wasn't very exciting. So we just deleted all the safety valves and printed it in a way that absolutely breaks every format. Like, oh, my God, what are you doing, Watsy? I know you want to make exciting cards, but, like, I'm not saying you got to put all your money in mutual funds, but you also don't have to YOLO into, you know, out-of-the-money options. Like, there's a wise way that you can manage your risk here and not just do it on Vivi. In Vivi, the one downside of Vivi is it dies, right? Like, you can kill it. It's a removal check card. But if you're playing it with Cauldron, then you can't even kill it because they want it in the graveyard. So it gets rid of Vivi's biggest weakness. I was talking about this on social media and someone's like, yeah, main deck graveyard hate. And I was like, 50% of decks are playing Cauldron, which is main deck graveyard hate. And it's still doing the thing. Like, we have every deck is playing main deck graveyard hate because of Egg of the Soul Cauldron. It is hard for me to see how we get out of this one. Is there anything lurking, Krim? I know you don't mind the one deck meta at the moment, but do you think there's anything that could realistically rise up and challenge this? I know it's still super close to rotation. I want to think, like, it hasn't been that long. Things are still going to evolve. Like, we just had rotation. This is just, like, week two, and we just have this deck that, you know, shot up, and people are going to figure it out. Am I being too hopeful there that we're going to figure this out? Is this really just tier zero until we get a banning or a new set?
I mean, I think that there's definitely, we'll see in the coming weeks, but I mean, it is a good, it's a good deck. I think the deck is absurdly strong. I do think that, like, yeah, this is probably best deck in format. There's probably decks that can beat it. I think that, like, Dimir can beat it, right? I think that there's ways to go about it, but, like, it's still got those free matches, right? Where if your deck isn't, like, equipped for it, you just win, right? Like, there's no way, and, like, there, it's nice, right? That is... Where as a sweat lord, if you have the decks that just are free wins because they don't respect your deck, then I think that's a good deck to play for a tournament. And I think the play patterns, yes, keeping track of it, Richard, is rough. But it's so fun, Richard. It's so
no, it's not fun,
dude.
It's not what was that meme I saw in our group chat? Like, Tron goes 127, Vivi goes 1-2, like 40, and then 40 on your return.
Yeah.
like, and you're like, well, the hard thing is I'm gonna make 50 mana, okay? And then I have to loot 80 times. So I gotta sequence this all. So it's very hard, guys, right? Like, I'm like, it's not, I don't know, man. It's not what we expect out of standard Magic, and the free wins come too frequent, and the problem is the hate doesn't even work. Like, yeah. If you bring in Graveyard, let's say you bring in a Leyline of the Void, you're just gonna die to, like, this, like, slightly weaker Prowess deck. You know what I mean? Like, they just, like, cast a couple spells, loot a couple times, and just smack you without even, like, doing the Cauldron route, right? Like, it's so... Yeah. Versatiles, and I don't know what you do against this. And a lot of pros I saw going into this event said, if you're not playing Vivi, you're trolling, and I believe them. You know, like, I think they actually tested it, and they're like, there's nothing here, right? Yeah. And then, you know, cue up the quote about standard players being lazy or whatever, right? like you just play best deck, and especially since it's so complicated, you just invest your time into playing the mirror and, like, getting good at the mirror, and then you win everything, right? So, like, there's no incentive to brew anything at this point.
I'm curious what you guys think is going to happen with this. So, we just had rotation, we just had bannings. If you go by the schedule, the next ban list updates end in November, sometime around Thanksgiving. I want to say 26th of November, and that's one of the emergency ones where typically they don't ban things and standard on the emergency ones. The next, like, full one is sometime in the beginning of the year. Is it realistic that we just, like, run through this for 3 months, 6 months, like, with Spider-Man Avatar coming out? Like, will Wizards just actually, do you think they'll stick to that schedule, assuming nothing changes, right? But again, it's still a week after rotation. I want to hedge my bets. Like, I'm not super confident that something's going to dethrone Izzet Cauldron, but we'll see what the results look like over the next couple of weeks. But assuming that something does need to change, do you think they actually change something? Or are they going to stick to the schedule of not banning anything and just be like, if it's 75% Cauldron, have fun, guys. At least Krim is enjoying it, at least. We know Krim's enjoying it, so at least we got one fan.
I just don't like the price of it. The price, the $800 thing. Yeah, okay, that's not cool, right?
That's gonna keep happening. That's gonna be a problem. Like, we talked about this when they announced the Universes Beyond in standard, not about the IPs, but like six sets with half of the sets being at a higher price point because you got to pay for the rights to use the IPs. Then one of the big concerns was standard getting too expensive, and I think we're seeing that. Like, we have the best deck in standard at $800, but it's kind of even worse than that, because a couple of months ago I actually ran through the prices of standard and I found that the average out of the top 10 or 12 decks, the average cost was like $326, which actually wasn't that bad compared to historical prices, especially if you consider inflation. But that number has jumped up to almost $450 in just the last couple months because of rotation. So we're already seeing like just the cost of playing standard really going through the roof. And that seems like a really big deal. Like, I don't know how people invest in this deck. It's $800 to play the deck in the format, and you got to know in the back of your head that there's some risk it gets banned at some point, right? Like, can you really recommend that a player go out and spend $800 on the Cauldron deck, knowing that it's such a huge percent of the meta and people are already talking about the possibility of a banning? Like, what, how do you handle that?
Simple. You tell them to always do what I would do, and I would tell every new player this: you build a mid-range deck. You may lose, but you know you're doing the fairest thing in the format. I'm being serious.
I just built a paper standard deck. Okay, I have assembled to play in my standard showdowns and store champs or whatever. Okay, I spent $150. Right, the ticket price would be $200 because I'm playing four bobs. I'm playing Rakdos, some kind of tier three jank, and it still cost me $200, and I had to make budget concessions because I really should be playing Starting Town, and four Starting Towns is $130. So even the most garbage tier three mid-range deck, you're copping like $300 for. Like, the price is actually like kind of insane. And mana is so bad in standard. Like, all of the verges are like $10 each, and then Starting Town is like $30 or whatever, right? So just your mana base is ridiculous. And I'm like, I have Shocklands, good thing they're worth nothing, right? Good thing only half of them are in standard. But like, you gotta buy the verges, you gotta buy the Starting Towns, and who wants to spend like half of their deck budget on these lands, right? And you're just gonna get wrecked. Like, I play against Vivi, I'm like, cool, bro. What I'm banking on is no one else is gonna buy Vivi, right? So, because I'm playing in my eight player store champs or whatever, like, we're just gonna go play our mid range garbage and call it a day. But it's still very expensive, right? It's still very, very $200 for a budget deck that's like tier three or whatever. Like, that's kind of gross.
But also, yeah, like, I would argue that Dimir is like tier one. And that's only like $100 more.
Yes.
I mean, so, yeah, like, Demir's like 360, which I think that it's this kind of our magic brains, though. We see 360 compared to Modern or compared to Vivian, we're like, oh, that's not too expensive. But in the real world, $360 is a lot to spend on pieces of cardboard.
But pieces of cardboard an expensive hobby? Like, I think this is already, that's a pretty common thing, is it not? I mean, like, I guess, like, every TCG is all outside of Pokemon because, you know, obvious. It feels like Magic being only 360 or so around there is solid outside of Vivi. Outside of Vivi, right? Like, Vivi is a, wow, that's expensive. But what is a price that you think is acceptable for a standard deck?
$100.
And a realistic one. A realistic one. Not like
$100. One piece, I could build tier deck after tier deck after tier deck. And, you know, outside of a couple outliers, you can do it, right? Like, and the difference is, like, a tier two deck that costs literally $20 is very competitive in One Piece, but it is not in Magic the Gathering. And the other difference is I'm fine spending $20 for my Nami, right? Because I'm like, oh, it's my favorite character. Yeah, you know, it's like spending money for Vivi is okay. Spending money for Starting Town is not. Spending money for Stomping Ground or Thornspire Verge or whatever is not, right? They're just lands, right? And you don't feel good spending the big bucks for them. And I don't know, standard balance kind of whack. Like, you don't even know if your deck is going to work. Like, what if they unleash the mice again to to combat Vivi, right? Oh, they banned Vivi. Who knows, right? No. Like, it's in such flux that it's so bad, right? And, like, the money I spent at pre-release just got incinerated, right? Like, what Edge of Eternities cards or Final Fantasy cards are actually being played? Like, zero, right? So... it's just expensive. I mean, and
Sunset
it's not...
Saboteur. But like,
yeah, like one card out of Edge and like, you know, some random uncommon removals being played, right? But
don't get me wrong.
It's not good. I understand why
like spending money on resources like lands feels kind of bad, but like Magic is a game with lands. Lands is a thing that is a part of our game and is considered a feature, right? So if you don't like lands, In the game and whatnot, like just as a basic game function, that I totally get. But lands are what Magic is, like why we're a great game. And I think that's why I think I've kind of gotten over that mental hump.
I agree that lands are like why part of the reason why Magic is such a great game. Although I will say it's also a little bit of a cop out because they don't have to, like, they intentionally choose to print lands at high rarity to make them expensive to sell packs and sets. Like, lands are not important for draft. Draft would probably be better if all rare dual lands were uncommon. Like, there's no reason you couldn't have shock lands being uncommon or something. So it is a choice Wizards has made. I've kind of gotten used to it because it's always been like this. I remember when shocks were $50 a piece right after Modern was created and fetches were $100 a piece. So my Magic brain has just gotten used to lands being super expensive, but they don't have to be super expensive. And I feel like the standard right now hurts more because if those lands are like shock lands, I don't feel too bad about spending money on them because I'm like, oh, I can use them in a Commander deck. I can use them in a Modern deck. But when those lands are Verges, which I actually think are pretty bad lands overall, but you just have to play them because they're one of the only options in Standard, or they're starting town for way more than you pay for a City of Brass or what better version of that effect, that's when it really hurts because as I'm buying those cards, I'm like, well, they're going to print the rest of the shock lands eventually, and then the starting town is going to be like $5 because no one needs it anymore once we get real lands. So I feel like that's kind of part of the problem is the specific lands you have to spend on right now.
I mean, sure. Like, I think the lands are expensive, right? Like, especially starting town, right? Like, starting town is like absurdly pricey. So yeah, like it feels.
This is all Wizards' fault, by the way, because they gave us half a set of fetch shock lands, right? Like, and so you have to lean on starting town to fix your mana in the other colors.
So do you think this
make them uncommon? We have so you're like, oh, but limited, guys. But okay, we have sets that have uncommon dual land cycles, like Final Fantasy. You could have just shoved all the shocks in there and called it a day. And given that we're in Universes Beyond World and the cards that hold value are Sephiroth, Vivi, things like that, I don't think it would hurt Wizards' bottom line to put shock lands at uncommon, right? And maybe you're like, they're premium. Well, put the Verges at uncommon. Who cares about the Verges, right? Like, just put them at uncommon. Make the mana base cheap because it is a critical part of Magic, right? But it doesn't mean it has to be a critical part of Magic finance. Like, we're beyond that now, right? We don't need lands to sell packs. We can just put favorite Universes Beyond character in there, right? So, but it feels so bad. It feels so bad to, like, buy these Verges, knowing that they go to zero. I have no use of them outside. The only thing holding shocks is, like, Modern and Commander, right? And even then, it's kind of a meme. Like, does anyone play Modern? But, you know, it's not theoretical. But Verges go nowhere, right? So it feels so bad.
And to wrap back around to your original question, Krim, I think for me, decks like topping out in the like 400-ish, maybe 500 max range is like that's where I'm okay with seeing the like most expensive deck in Standard. I don't think having an expensive deck in Standard is a bad thing. I do think having the S tier deck in Standard be the most expensive deck and be $800 is kind of problematic. But if you just look at Magic compared to Magic, Standard right now is actually more expensive than Pioneer, I'm pretty sure. If you just go tier deck to tier deck and like look at the prices of decks, the number one Pioneer deck right now is $168. Rakdos Midrange is the most expensive one at $568. Like right now, Standard is more expensive than an Eternal format, and that just tells me something is out of whack, right? That's not how the Magic economy is supposed to work. Standard is supposed to be the cheap entry format, and then it gets more expensive the further you go back. So seeing Standard cost more than an Eternal format, to me, that's a pretty big sign that, like, something's wrong with the pricing right now.
Oh, I mean, yeah, clearly. This is, the pricing of this is terrible right now. Like, oh my God.
So yeah, really like, I don't know.
Huh? You can't really fix it though. Like it just uses chase mythics from the set. Like the price of cauldron is literally this. Bunch of VVs, $200. Bunch of soul cauldrons, $280. Some number starting towns, $100. Some verges. That's like the whole deck. Everything else is bulk, right? So how
FOMO
are you going
is
to
now
fix-
climbing up, by the way.
Eldraine FOMO and Final Fantasy. It's not just Final Fantasy, right? Like Eldraine is in here with Soul Cauldron. So I don't know. Why is it so expensive? Why don't we just crack boxes of Eldraine and call it a day? Is there nothing of value in Eldraine whatsoever?
I mean, yeah. Did you see Into the Flood Maw, by the way? That is an uncommon.
Wait, how much like, is it now?
It's like $4 to $7, I think, or somewhere around there.
So to answer your question, Richard, if you actually look at Wilds of Eldraine, Soul Cauldron's almost $70, Beseech the Mirror's $14, and then there's like four other mythics that are over $5, and everything else is $2 or less. So yeah, if you have the Soul Cauldron, it's great to crack a box, but mathematically, EV-wise, the rest of the set's so bulky that it doesn't actually work out to crack boxes, unfortunately.
This is the problem of having so many unplayables in your sets. Like, only one card is playable, it takes up the entire value of the
set,
sucks
it all
up. And then
yep.
Like, oh, I hate that about Magic. Like, why don't you just make like most of the cards playable, and then it would be equally distributed, right?
Do you think? Here's a question I've really been wondering about lately with this VV stuff and some other cards. I see a lot of the problem as the change to adding Universes Beyond to Standard means, and really this isn't even Universes Beyond, it's a change with adding more sets to Standard and the growth of Commander, but every set has to be designed for Commander to be exciting for Commander players. Even if you just listen to Wizards talk about Nadu, about Vivi, we got to make it exciting for Commander players. We're designing it for Commander players. But you also have to put all these cards through Standard. So you have to make a card that is exciting for a format where turn one Soul Ring is the most common play in the format. Like, that's the power level of the format. But you also have to put all these cards through Standard, which is supposed to be the not as powerful kind of starter format where you can learn how to play Constructed. Is that even possible? Like, is it possible? Is Wizards just trying to accomplish something that is literally not possible to accomplish, which is making exciting Commander cards and putting them all through Standard and having nothing break?
I think that is a terrible idea.
It seems hard to actually do that. Yeah. I feel bad for Wizards because I don't know how you actually achieve that goal.
Well, the thing is, I think the way you go about this is you just design for Standard, right? Everything else should trickle down, right? If you want to do stuff for Commander, that's what the Commander product is for, you know, like make a supplemental product or something like that, right? But do not try to design for Commander in the main set of a Standard set. Like, do not do that. That is not good.
No one would buy it. We have the Commander supplemental with every set, right? Final Fantasy has Final Fantasy Commander, right? Edge of Eternity has Edge of Eternity's Commander. But if they do not put Commander playable cards into the main set, it will not sell, right? And that is kind of the problem. I would say this worked for Magic for like 10, 15 years prior to the new era by just having your Commander cards be terrible 8-drops, you know, that like do some things. But because they've power crept Commander so hard, like that's no longer viable, right? It needs to be a 3-drop that draws 3 cards and makes 50 mana. And then that affects Standard. I don't think we're fixing it. I do think they could just balance it. Like, I feel there's literal zero balance. Like, I feel Soul Cauldron Vivi was quite obvious, and that if they sat down and played with it for a while, they should have discovered this. So it's clear to me that they just did not test this in, like, any capacity whatsoever, right? And I feel that is the problem, and not really Universes Beyond. Like, Universes Beyond will make it harder, right? But this is the most brain-dead, like, first thing you look at this. Like, we called it on the podcast, right? It's, like, super obvious. They should do, you know, they should play it, right? And they should immediately see what it does, and then they should fix it. So I feel there's just no balance team whatsoever, and that's their fault. It's not Universes Beyond, although Universes Beyond is not helping. It's not Commander, although it's not helping. Like, just balance your game like you used to.
Do you think... do you think it even matters? Does Wizards care? I remember, Richard, we were looking at some data one time a while ago, and it was data versus how much money Paper Magic makes versus Arena. And we saw this huge gap between Paper and Arena. And we're like, wow, that makes a lot of sense why there's no spectator mode and they don't do more with Arena. Like, if Arena's just not making any money, they just don't care that much. So why would they do it? Are we back in that situation? Like, are we in a situation where Commander's so big and profitable and Standard is not, when you compare it to Commander, that it's just like, why would we bother to test this stuff? Why would we bother to do anything? Because Standard, it doesn't matter anymore. Like, is that too cynical?
That's way too cynical. I think that is too cynical. We're now going and diving into the hypotheticals, right? And this is going to be a never-ending pit, and I know that. So I think that is way too cynical, because Magic is still by gameplay, the best card game, right? And yeah. So
Cope, guys. I think that's actually Cope. Here's my ranking of, I haven't even played Lorcana, right? But like, MTG Limited sits atop the pile in terms of gameplay, but it is one of the most unpopular Magic formats of all time. Most people don't even engage in it, right? After that, One Piece 1v1, far greater than Standard, far greater, right? I would put Legacy or something similar like under it, right? And then I would put Commander, then I would put 1v1 Standard. Like, it's not even close, right? I think part of it is just kind of like Cope for a long time. It is like the game most likely to survive. You know, if I'm going to buy $1,000 of Final Fantasy, in 5 years, Magic will exist. Every other game, question mark, except for Pokemon, right? But Pokemon gameplay is bad, right? Like, will Flesh and Blood exist? Will One Piece exist? Will Gundam exist? Will Riftbound exist? No one knows. Magic will exist no matter what. That's what keeps it going. But I think the quality of Standard gameplay has gone down for quite a long time, and we're just kind of coping and keeping on for like no reason. But like, every format is like dominated by some broken thing, and you're like, oh, you know, if you just ignore Mice for a second, if you ignore Steel Cutter for a second, if you ignore Oko for a second, you know, Magic is great, right? But we spend more time in the bad mode of Magic than the good mode, right?
How is One Piece different? I'm very curious, right? Like, I mean, You've kind of also got Blue Purple Luffy, who has zero balance as well, though, right? You have blue, like,
there's always a best second format, but every set, all the new cards see play, right?
Like, but that's because they're doing the
new Zoro loader, you get the new Rayleigh leader. Like, every when I buy a booster box of One Piece, it's not all complete trash. You know, like, all of the zero value dollar cards can be made into decks that can be played. Right. And every game is skill intensive. I've been playing a lot of Standard, and like, I just play my dailies and call it a day. that is the extent of my testing, because I'm like, you know, like, it's not like,
I mean,
like, Final Fantasy Limited is peak. Final Fantasy Limited is peak. Right. But
limited?
Edge of Eternity is limited. Yeah, right? So, well, I mean, but Final most Fantasy, people don't play Final Fantasy Limited, right? Like, if you're talking about Standard is, like, several notches below that. So, and I don't know, right? Like, I remember time when Standard was good, right? Like, I remember a time when Standard was good, right? And Modern was good, right? Like,
I was going to ask you, Richard, would your ranking be different if it was 10 years ago, let's say? Like, was there a point when you thought Magic Standard was the greatest card game? Or is it, you've always felt this way? Like,
is it that the game has gotten worse?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I guess that's true. But
I don't know. Like, it's a factor of things, but like, the death of the SEG circuit and like the grinder mentality and like the emphasis on Pro Tour kind of removed the gameplay aspects of the game. Like, there is no reward for getting good. Remember, I played 1,000 games of Final Fantasy Limited. I actually checked my 17 lands.
Wow.
Right? And I'm like, I can convert this into absolutely nothing. Right? There's like no high level event for me to play.
Booster
like
boxes,
kind of like,
Richard.
There's kind of like
Arena
nothing
Direct
for me to do with it. Right? Like, so I'm like, wow, that kind of sucked. Right? Like, it's, I don't know, like the death of the Pro Tour, I think, has a direct impact on how we play the game in a sweaty manner. And then now we just casually play our cards, tap out, call it a day, and then go home.
And
so, and it's, so I go back to when that happened. I don't know when that happened, right? But the move away from organized play gave me no incentive to improve upon the game, which gave me no incentive to think like outside of the literal seconds I'm playing the game. You know, like the best is like when you go home from a PTQ and you're thinking, you know, you're like, oh,
thinking, yep.
You know, oh, the round three, you know, like game two. Well, what was the line, right? Let me call my friend. We gotta deconstruct this, right? You know, what was the sideboard plan? You know, but like none of that happens anymore. And that really takes away from the enjoyment. And I will say One Piece, that definitely still happens. Like, because it has like legacy number of decisions to make every turn. There's just so many ways to screw it up that all you need to do is not screw it up. And whoever screws up first loses. Whereas standard is like, you kind of just play curve. And if your deck list didn't match up or your sideboard plan didn't match up, you're kind of boned, right? Like, so I don't know. Okay, that's just old man Richard talking about sweaty magic. We don't play like that anymore. We don't play sweaty magic anymore.
I would say
a lot of sweaty magic, and I just don't see the
game.
Do
you find it rewarding though?
Yeah, it's so rewarding. What? Like I'm sorry. I get it. Like I get it if you've played Magic for a long time and you know, like, yeah, you've seen a lot of standard, you've seen a lot of metagames. But dude, I feel like standard I still like the tight lines of play here. I think everything you just described about One Piece is still found in standard. Right. Like I still fully believe that Vivi, as much as you can like say that, yeah, it is the best deck, whether or not you like a one deck meta. Sure, that's a thing. It is a rewarding deck to play. It is. If it wasn't, the pros wouldn't play it. Right. Like it is a very strong deck. Yes. But I mean, you just find that across every card game. Right. Every card game has that. Like in One Piece, blue purple Luffy, I guess. You could say that is the best deck in format, right? Because I still follow the game. I just don't care because it feels weird that their power balancing is just to like power creep the last set, right? So they're doing the Yu-Gi-Oh thing, right? So like I don't know. I mean, I still really like Magic's like gameplay. Magic is still by far and wide the most rewarding when it comes to depth and all of that to me. But that's because I think me, Richard, and like Seth, we're like the last like three standard players.
The last airbenders?
We are the last
airbenders.
Yeah. We are the last three people talking about standard. Everyone like you
That's
about,
what
like,
makes it sad, right? That's what makes it
sure,
not fun.
Sure.
You know what I mean? That's, like it's not just us, right? Our whole community. But our whole community is outgunned by like, you know, the commander community, the collector community. Yeah. Like no one cares about sweaty magic anymore. And no one like engages in the same way. And times change, but Wizard's not helping, man. Wizard's not helping the cause.
We just gotta wait for the K-pop set and then all will be salved.
We're just gonna
hold on a little bit longer. Really, I still think magic is for me, I find it very rewarding to play still. Although I do feel like for the last 5 years, we've just bounced from broken thing to broken thing. That's the part that I really dislike, is just like, I think it's the fire design era, if you look at that, and this big push towards like, we need to make cards exciting, which started around Throne of Eldraine. And ever since then, I feel like it's just been this constant cycle of one broken thing to another broken thing in pretty much every format. I still think the gameplay is really good, and you get these like gaps in between like set releases and bannings where it's like super fun, but then before long it goes back to the next broken thing and the cycle repeats itself. So that's the part that I get tired of, but I still love playing Magic.
I guess, like, you know what, it's so hard to tell what's actually broken nowadays though. Okay, Vivi I would say is probably
Vivi
broken.
I think is probably broken,
but
yeah,
but like I do think that like it's hard to tell what is actually broken because everything is considered a problem all the time. And so I'm just, you know what I mean? Like every set, there's the difference between broken and best deck are two different things. And I think more often than not, I still always hear everything is broken. This is busted. This should have been
broken is if I had free reign. I know you're bringing that deck and I can build whatever I want to counter it. And yeah. I have no good answer. That is broken. And, you know, the answer is I play the same deck with sideboard tech, you know, like that, you
sure.
know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, okay, you know Steel Cutter is coming. What do you do against it? Nothing.
Yeah.
Right? You know VV Cauldron is coming. What do you do against it? Nothing. Right? So, I don't know. I just want Wizards to balance the format. Like, I get it. Yeah. If, like, a deck like Lantern Control or Amulet comes out, you're like, well, you know, like, who's going to think about this? It's so weird, yeah. right? But I'm like, did you play Cori Steelcutter, right? Yeah. Have you played, like, 100 games with it? Like, maybe it's, like, quite apparent what it's going to do, right? Or, like, Oko, like, did you try using all the abilities on it, right? Like, I feel there's no testing, right? You know, like, you can give us crap for making wrong calls, but we just sit on a podcast and talk. It's not our job to balance. So it's okay that we get things wrong, right? But if it is your, like, organization of like multiple people whose 40-hour work week is to balance this and they get it so laughably wrong, like it's a problem, right? Like they should not be missing these like really straightforward things, and that's kind of the problem, right?
I'm very forgiving of, we made equipment for the first time and Skull Clamp was broken, we made vehicles for the first time and Smuggler's Copter was broken. Less forgiving about, well, I had to make Nadu exciting for Commander, so I just stuck some abilities on it and didn't bother to test it, and it broke everything, which is kind of what some of the mistakes feel like. They're not good. Not all the mistakes are good mistakes. Like, there's good mistakes, I think, where you're taking risks that make sense, and things don't work out, and that's perfectly fine. We want Wizards to take some amount of risk. But then there's just some bad bets, I think, that have been made on stuff like VVs and Nadus, where it's just like, you really should have saw that one coming. We're running long, but I got to sneak in this one fish mail, because I want to know your answer to this question, even though the fish mail did not phrase it as a question, but we'll make a question out of it. This comes to us from @OnlyWe on Twitter says, do you guys remember when they banned do you guys remember when they banned Emrakul and turned Standard from a two-deck format into a one-deck format? I'm reminded very much of that right now. Bannings can make Standard worse. So I don't actually remember exactly that happening with the Emrakul banning. That was kind of a rough era of Standard. But the question I have in here, and what I think what the point of this is did the recent Standard banning somehow backfire and make Standard worse? Like, with what we're seeing with Vivi and Cauldron now, does this sour either of you on the bannings we had a month or two ago? Do you look at them in a different light now?
I think that Prowess being gone is a good thing. I think that prowess being gone is a good thing. I actually, if you're going to have a busted deck in the format, again, I want one that where it's actually rewarding. And I think that this deck, prowess was still like rewarding, but like there was like some games where I just felt like Steelcutter, it just wins, right? Steelcutter is just the best card, and there's so many problems there. And obviously, Monstrous Rage is insane. I think we still need an aggro deck, because why wasn't Vivi a thing then, right? Was it because aggro? Like, I think the problem here is right now, aggro is gone. And that is something I wish was still here. I wish decks could still, like respect that. And I think Vivi decks don't, because they don't care, right? They will just win before, because it's slow enough. So that is the only part of the banning that I wish could be undone, because I didn't think that you needed to take their one drop. Maybe Monstrous Rage, sure, but like, I think aggro should have been, it should always be a part of the format.
So the current Vivi deck plays no Edge of Eternity's cards. So this entire deck was theoretically legal, like pre-banning, but no one played it. So it must have been aggro, right? It must have been the fast aggro that took it out. What else could it be?
I will say, Paulo, PVDDR, has been preaching Is It Cauldron since going back to Pro Tour Final.
Yeah, I remember that.
He's been saying best deck in the format. He played it at the Pro Tour. He was telling everyone, this is actually the deck you should be playing. So one person did figure it out, and Paulo actually did. So shout out to him for actually figuring it out. I think that aggro is maybe part of it, what's made it so much better. I would say, though, I think that the issue was probably not banning Vivi. I don't think the problem was that they banned too much. It's probably that they banned too little. And I remember when we were at Magic on Vegas talking to pros who were playing at the Pro Tour, and the one thing I heard from pretty much every person I asked was Vivi is the busted card. There's no way they actually will ban it because Final Fantasy just came out, so it's not going to happen. But Vivi is the card that is actually absurd. Like, that is the card that is actually, and that one dodged the banning. So I think maybe they should have actually just banned Vivi too. Not that they ever would have when they did the banning, because it was so close to set release. But I think that's how I view it. I think the problem was not that they banned too much, it's that they should have actually banned more.
All right, here's what I would do if I was Wizards. I would go on Twitter and I would hire a ragtag team of 10 pros. Okay. I will fly them out to Wizards of the Coast, and for 2 weeks they will test. Okay. And after those 2 weeks, we will make a B&R announcement and standard will be fixed. What I don't want them to do is like have one random PM come in and be like, yeah, ban Vivi. And then Vivi gets banned, and then another broken deck is sitting there. And then we sit here and complain some more. Like, yeah. Can we do some testing? If we just ban Vivi, is the format okay? Right? What if we give back Steel Cutter? Maybe that's fine too. I don't know, right? Who knows, right? But please test the format, you know, like play some games, you know, see what's going on here. And maybe use beta client, man. Like we have this beta Magic client sitting around that I don't know. So they used to use it for early access, but they could just spin up another domain where they test out ban lists and have people play on it. And people will happily play for free to test out your product, right? Like maybe we need that, right? Because we can't just go from broken format to broken format to broken format. Like the wallets cannot handle this, right? Like consumer confidence will be in the tank, right? So we need to do the correct thing, and it needs to last.
And I think Wizard knows that, because the change to 3-year standard, if you look at their reasoning, their whole reasoning was people want their cards legal longer. They want to have confidence that if they're spending money in their cards, they're going to be able to play with them for a long time. And if you just got to go from broken banning to broken banning, it kind of undermines all that, right? It undoes all the work that you did switching to 3-year standard to try to get people confidence in their cards. Because if you got to spend $800 on Is It Cauldron only to inevitably end up with it getting banned at some point in the future, that's just going to undermine that confidence anyway. So anyway, we went a little long today, but I think that's our podcast for today. So let us know what you think about all this in the comments. Richard Grimm, thanks for hanging out. Thanks everyone for listening. Thanks to Card Conduit for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to talk about whatever goes on in the world of Magic. So until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out. We'll